Right. Good morning, Melbourne Church. So I've been thinking about VBS coming up and looking at the contrast of light and dark. And has anyone here ever been in absolute pitch black darkness? I mean, you cannot see. Last night I turned out the hallway light to walk into my bedroom. It was pitch black dark, and I stood at the foot of my bed grasping for the chain, not able to find it. And I find that frustrating. And it was dark. You know, when I finally got it turned on, I could see what was going on. I could plug my phone in and get ready to actually get into bed. Now, there is a lady named Rose Crawford. You may know of her story. She lost her eyesight at the age of 4 due to measles. So she had eyesight for 4 years. And she married young, and she had been blind for 50 years. 50 years of blindness. And then she had an operation. And as the doctor lifted the bandages from her eyes, she began to cry as she saw the light all around her, and she looked into her husband's eyes for the very first time. Her 50 years of blindness was completely unnecessary because she did not know that a surgical operation could have restored her vision at the age of 30 years old. The doctor was quoted by saying, "She just figured there was nothing that could be done for her condition. Much of her life could have been very different." Now, often I encounter people that believe nothing can be done for the condition that they're living in. But Jesus sees things differently. And in John chapter 8, verse 12, "Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, 'I am the light of the world.'" And in this passage, Jesus is making a claim, church. He makes the claim that he is the light of the entire world. Not a part of the world, but the entire world. And this is one of Jesus' identity statements, and it tells us exactly who Jesus is. So I want to bring about three things for us to think about this morning. But number one, we have a choice to make when Jesus makes that claim. Do I believe that Jesus is the light of the world? Do I really buy into this idea that when I've got darkness in my life, the more that I move towards him, the more relief, the more light, the more of real life I enter into? Do I really believe that? Because Jesus is not one of many lights in this world. When you read the New American Standard Version, light is capital L because it stands for deity. Jesus is the capital L light. And when you go back throughout the Old Testament, we see imagery that God is light. And Psalm 27:1 is a great example. "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. Whom shall I dread?" Now, this psalm demonstrates that God is the light and the salvation for his people, and the Lord is the one who defends and protects his children, and these qualities make God light. Numbers chapter 6, verses 24 through 26. "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace." This is an old Israelite blessing. And when the Lord shines his presence on a person, they're blessed and they experience the Lord's peace and his grace. In Psalm 119:105, it said of God that "your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." So this concept of God being light, It's ancient, church. It's very old, and it goes back to the beginning of time. So when Jesus makes this bold claim that he is the light of the world, those Jews that were listening would have made the connections to all of these scriptures that they knew so well. Many of them they had memorized by the age of 12. This was a radical statement. This is not just some statement Jesus makes in passing. And I want you to keep that in mind as we come back to the book of John. We're going to start in chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So John presents the capital W Word as a person, and that's how he starts off his entire gospel. Verses 2 and following. He who is the Word, we'll find out later in John, that's Jesus. He says that Jesus was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, through the Word. And in Jesus was life. The life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. The darkness could not overpower the light. You cannot bring more and more darkness into light and it affect it. But the more light you bring into the darkness, the more it expels it. And that's how that works. And Jesus comes along and he says that John comes along and says that Jesus is the eternal Word, and he's the only light. He's the one and the only. He's the only unique one of his kind, and he is light. So Jesus was in the very beginning on day one of creation, co-creating everything with God. I find that fascinating. The darkness cannot overpower the light of Christ. I've seen a lot of darkness in this world, and the root of all darkness is sin and evil. And the light of Christ counters that. Now, to gain a little bit of understanding, I want us to take a look at John chapter 7, verse 2, because we need to see where Jesus is headed before we get into chapter 8. The text reads, "Now the feast of the Jews, the feast of booths, was near." Now, between John chapter 7, verse 2 and verse 14, Jesus actually walked to the temple in Jerusalem. Galilee is in the north part of Israel. Well, Jerusalem and the temple is in the southern part. So Jesus walked quite a ways to get there. And we read in verse 14, "In the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and began to teach." So Jesus is now at what is called the Feast of Booths, and he's teaching in the temple. The Feast of Booths was a week-long celebration to remind Israel that they had been led out of Egyptian slavery by God. And while they wandered through the wilderness, they slept in tents. And back then it was called booths, but it's a tent. So during the Feast of Booths, or the Feast of Tents, God had them to reenact coming out of the wilderness, and they literally slept in tents versus the comforts of their home or a hotel or an inn that they could have stayed in. And we read a little bit about it in Exodus 13, 21 and 22. "The Lord was going before them in a pillar of cloud by day to lead them on the way, and in a pillar of fire by night to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night." God did not take away the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people. The key word here, church, is found in verse 21. They were led. They were led. And to be led has the implication you have to follow or you will not be led anywhere. So that's a choice to be made. Now, this visible fire and cloud was a sign of two things primarily. It was God's power, but it was also God's presence. And God wanted his people to know he was with them. That was a critical thing for them to experience. And the presence of God, it was very practical and it was very helpful. I read several different scholars on this, and they believe that this cloud during the day followed directly over Israel, and it sheltered them with shade over the fierce sun of the desert, and it allowed them to travel further than they could have. The whole purpose was God's protection from enemies while they were traveling. Now, that helps me understand. But when we look at this light from the fire of God that was at night, well, that's necessary for traveling at night. You can elude a lot of people at night if you can get ahead of them. And God took care of his people in these ways. And when I think about it, if they wouldn't have followed the cloud, if they would not have followed this fire, they wouldn't have made it very far because they wouldn't have known where they were going. They had to be able to know. And now we come to John chapter 8 and chapter 7. And it's 1,500 years after this journey through the wilderness. Now they're at the Feast of Booths. They are celebrating God's leadership, his protection. They're celebrating his provision through this 40-year journey. And while they're sleeping in tents, they are reminded of who God is. It's a celebration of God's love. And it was in the middle of this celebration that Jesus made the statement that I am the light of the world. And then in John chapter 8, verse 20, John points out something that is very significant. These words Jesus spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple. So Jesus made this statement and this claim to his identity in the temple treasury. This is also the exact same place where the money changers were when he braided the whip and whipped them on out of there. Okay, so that's where we're at. And this area is also called the women's court. And it has no roof. It's just got the open sky above it with large walls around it. And interestingly enough, archaeologists found this site and they dug it up. Once they did, I found an institute online. They made this digital recreation of what that would have looked like. And what I want you to pay attention to are these four posts. Jesus stood right in the middle of these at night, and every single one of them have four torches on top of each singular one. These posts are over 20 feet tall. They're taller than our telephone poles outside. They are 4 to 5 feet wide at the base, and they taper to the top. Each one holds 17 gallons of fuel. So you've got 16 torches that burn here in the night in this one small court. I didn't know it till I did the research this last week. These lights were lit for a very special ceremony purpose on the first night of the Feast of Booths. And it was in that context, standing underneath these lights, that Jesus made the statement that I am the light of the world. This is a radical, life-changing statement. And these lights represent that God is the light. And now all of a sudden, this guy named Jesus shows up. And he makes the claim that he is God. What Jesus said is that I am protection from your enemies. I am provision in dry and deserted places. Jesus is saying that I am God in the flesh standing before you. And this is an incredible revealing of the identity of Jesus Christ. Without the richness of that background, we tend to read past this. You see, Jesus is not some rebel crashing in on a religious party. He's not just some moral teacher or a good man or a good prophet. Jesus is God in the flesh, and he is the only light in a world that is completely filled with darkness and sin outside of him. And it represents that everything in this world centers around the Lord Jesus Christ. Everything centers around he who came into this dark world to save sinners and to bring redemption. See, Jesus is the one in Revelation chapter 21, verses 23 and following, who is the light of heaven. We read here that the city, the new Jerusalem, it's also heaven, has no need for the sun, no need for the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God has illumined it, and its lamp is the Lamb. John tells us that Jesus is the Lamb of God. He's the lamp, and he is the light that illuminates heaven itself. That qualifies him to be the light of this world as well as the light of heaven itself. And what this text does, it reveals the absolute glory and majesty of Jesus Christ. But that's not all Jesus said in John chapter 8, verse 12. Jesus again spoke to them, saying, "I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness." So number two, this brings us to another choice to be made. Will I follow Jesus, who is the light of the world? Will I buy into the idea that he is the light? And if I buy into that, will I buy into actually following him? Now, when first century people heard Jesus say, "Follow him," that invitation would have instantly brought to mind rabbinic language of following a rabbi. And if a disciple, if an apprentice, if someone looking to be taught, if they decided to follow a certain rabbi, they moved into his house that day. They shared meals, and everywhere that rabbi walked across that desert, their apprentice walked behind them. And this is where an old Jewish proverb comes from. It reads, "May you be covered in the dust of your rabbi." And the idea was to trust and follow so closely your rabbi that the dust kicked up from his feet would completely cover you head to toe. And that's the exact kind of loyalty that Jesus is looking for when he says, "I am the light, follow me. Follow me and you won't walk in darkness." Jesus wants to become the only source of truth and leadership in your life. And the idea is that we're in darkness until we place our life and all of our faith in Jesus Christ. We've got to become active followers of Jesus. And we make that a lifelong goal. We don't follow Jesus around the corner and then go and do what we want to. It's a lifelong apprenticeship where we never stop following and we never stop growing. And the imagery that's used here in John chapter 8, verse 12, it is the same of Israel following the pillar of fire and cloud all the way across the desert. I mean, they followed God for 40 full years before they entered into the promised land, and that was just the beginning of following God. They didn't even have the surface scratched yet. And now Jesus invites people to a life of a disciple as they follow him the same way that Israel followed God through the wilderness. I mean, Israel, this entire time, they were protected by God's love and care. They were being formed and shaped to trust God more. And I raised the question, when they saw the fire move at night, what did they have to do? They had to get up on their feet and actually follow, or they would have been completely lost. They didn't know where to go. And the story is the same in our life. Whenever we see the light of Jesus, if we don't follow that light, we will be completely lost, no different than Israel in that desert. And they knew they were safe in the presence of the Lord. But what they had to do, church, was follow him closely and stick with him. That's the whole moral of the story. That's what's underneath this statement, this identity statement and purpose statement of Jesus Christ. Now let's read John chapter 8, verse 12 in its entirety. Jesus again spoke to them, saying, "I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." So number three, we can walk in the light of life. We have that capacity to walk in the light of life. And for the Apostle John, a life lived without Christ was a life lived in absolute spiritual darkness. It was void from any light that actually lasted. And a life lived with Christ, it begins by believing that God is creator. He's the giver of light that actually makes a real, true spiritual life possible, that makes spiritual formation possible. And walking with Jesus is a life that truly strives to take his words into the heart. It allows those words to shape us and to form us at a soul level. And we continually look more like Jesus the longer that we're alive, all the way to the day that we die. And ultimately, those who choose to walk in the light of life, they have nothing to fear in death and darkness. I mean, the light of Christ has overcome darkness and death itself. And the light of life that Jesus offers, it is the absolute best life that we can live right now, but it's also the absolute best life we can live after we're raised from the dead. And there will be a resurrection of the wicked and the righteous. So everyone will come back from the dead. And depending on where you go from there, depends on who and what you choose to follow in this life. In John chapter 14, verses 1 to 4, Jesus says, "Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. If I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may also be. And you know the way where I'm going." Church, Jesus is preparing a place for his followers to live eternally, and he will be back to pick us up before you can blink your eyes. He has shown us exactly which way to go so that we can live in his love eternally. And the bottom line is, we must believe that he's the light. We must follow him closely, commit to that, and remain committed to it. And when we trust and follow Jesus like this, we do develop the capacity to walk in absolute light as we walk away from darkness. So ultimately, that is our theme for VBS. I look very forward to getting into that. This has helped me get some ideas generated. Me and the junior high kids are we're doing some skits, so we're looking forward to that. And again, this has just got some ideas stirred up. But if anyone here this morning, if you're